JD Vance gets told by, I got to assume maybe it's in good faith. Maybe he's not being trolled. Maybe somebody, some person in Springfield is trying this little dog whistle thing of being like, my Haitian neighbors, my dog went missing and it smelled like my dog. I don't know how you'd even prove that they ate your dog, but...
Welcome, everybody, to the first edition, I guess first episode, of the Blue Sedition podcast. I'm your host, Nate, don't want to give you my last name, alongside, this is his real name, Mike Smith. Mike, say what's going on.
Come and find me. I bet you can't.
He's actually a real guy. I'm Nate Brady. That's Mike Smith. We're, listen, we wanted to start this podcast. First of all, we identified a glaring gap in the market. We thought it was high time two middle-aged white guys just got out there and said what they thought about what was going on in the world of politics. We don't think there's a lot of white guys doing that right now.
Not enough of those guys.
None. But, you know, I'll give you Blue Sedition. I'm going to kick that over to you, Mike, because why did we... Wait, I mean, this was your idea, this Blue Sedition. Where did that come from?
Yeah. We've been talking politics for a long time here, Nate and I, and you know, the writing is on the wall. We've been knowing the Republicans are going to take power at some point. They're going to try and take over the world and outlaw everything. Or it's going to be bad. But we happen to live in one of the biggest blue states in the nation, at the very least population-wise. And so when they start enacting those crazy laws, we're going to do the same thing we did with marijuana. We're going to decriminalize it. We're going to say, good luck enforcing it at a federal level. We're just going to ignore them, basically. And it's the only way forward once the crazies are running the show, which they kind of are. Not to get too ahead of ourselves, but
the crazies.
We've got some crazies in SCOTUS, and we've had a crazy or two in the presidential seat in the last couple of decades. And so... It's hard to see a way out at this point other than a blue sedition.
Yeah.
Some blue sedition.
Yeah, I mean, so you're not saying, you know, you want the country of California against the rest of the world?
No, and I think it's an important distinction. So, like, you know, every 4 years or every 8 years, whenever there's a Democrat in power, Texas threatens to secede. That's their favorite move. Right. They put it on their ballot initiatives, and they go to vote, and their Supreme Court's like, you can't do it. It's unconstitutional. Then the actual Supreme Court says, that's right, it's unconstitutional, you can't do that. You'll never get a secession on any of the states here, just like you're not going to ever get an addition of another state. You're never going to get D.C., you're never going to get Guam or Puerto Rico or any of these other territories and with the current state of politics as they are. It's just not going to happen. Right. So the next best thing from secession, which I don't actually support, I don't think we should be rallying behind the notion of breaking up the United States, but I do think that leveraging the power that we have, which is the populace and one of the biggest GDP's portionality of the country, and just saying, no, we're not going to play by your rules. And it's how we're going to throw our weight around.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a whole lot to talk about there, including, I think we could end up talking about the Electoral College and the fact that, you know, the things that we want are the things that the majority of Americans want. But for some reason, we find ourselves in this situation every 4 years where we have a president that wasn't elected by the majority of the people and therefore doesn't represent what the majority of Americans want. And that, you know, how do we fix for that? Well, I like your idea at first, like we're just not going to do the crazy shit that that you want us to do. You know, and I think it's true that it's starting to even hurt them anyway. I mean, we might see in November that all of this abortion nonsense the right has been pushing is going to bite them in the ass.
I certainly hope so. I would love to keep them at arm's length as best we can for as long as we can. I'm here to just point out that we have some options should push come to shove.
Yeah. So with that, I was thinking just... You know, the first episode happens to come the day after a pretty intense, if not stupid, presidential debate, probably, I would say, one of the worst debates in presidential history, but Trump's been involved in a lot of them, so it's hard to say that now.
Yeah, it's definitely what I would consider one of the worst decorum debates that we've ever had, but then with the advent of Trump anyway, it's not really surprising that decorum went out the window the moment that man stepped on stage.
Yeah, and, you know, to not give credit where credit is due, but Joe Biden certainly didn't have a great performance his last debate, and these two guys arguing about their golf handicap was,
That was something.
That was something. But do you think...
Not to get ahead of ourselves, but I do think that was probably something the Biden campaign had tried as a, let's get Trump to get personally hurt and say something from emotion.
Sure.
And Biden, you know, delivered it with all of the excitement and brevity needed for an 80-year-old, and it just didn't really work.
Yeah. And yeah, you say not to get ahead of yourselves. I think Kamala did exactly that and nailed it. we're gonna hear some of that in a little bit. I just want to talk overall generally about our thoughts on the debate. I will say that one of the things that I like to do whenever a major event in politics happens, especially in regards to the presidential election, is look at the money markets, look at the prediction markets, like the Poly market, the Predictits of the world, even Vegas odds, and see, because, you know, CNN is going to give you their bullshit, Kamala won, Fox is going to tell you that Trump won, you know, both sides are just going to say they thought their candidate won. But what really speaks to me is, where is the money going now? Has the money started changing directions? And Kamala got huge bumps from all of, you know, from Vegas, from the money markets, prediction markets. She, from that respect, won the debate.
Yes, I have to agree. I don't think that the money markets necessarily reflect anything except the direction the popular vote tends to go.
Yeah.
So while, you know, I agree with you that her performance definitely bumped her a bunch, although this morning they're saying, I guess her bump came yesterday in aftermarket, and then today, yeah, look at this, September 10th, yesterday, she's at +8, +9, something like that, in the betting markets on Predictit, and today she's down a penny. So, I mean,
yeah,
it definitely was the shot in the arm that her campaign needed, or more importantly, maybe it wasn't her doing so well as much as it was just letting her bait him into doing as poorly as he did, because, I mean, he was abysmal last night.
Well, I think there were certainly a lot of people, rightfully so, especially independents, that are like, listen, I can't vote for Trump. I don't think I can vote for Trump. But man, where is Kamala? I haven't heard from her. She doesn't do a lot of interviews. I'd like to see her. What does she have to say to us? And I think at least last night we got a little glimpse of that.
I agree. I think that it's going to be a really interesting thing moving forward, because we were talking a little bit earlier before the show. We were saying, you know, when's the vice presidential debate and all that. And I think that last night was really just throw out some policy that you know is going to be positive. They didn't spend very much time on abortion or climate change or anything, but she spent a lot of time on economic policy and things like that, and just made her voice and her position, you know, heard. Like you're saying, I think the people who sort of blind to her or just don't know her positions on stuff were introduced to it. And then she segued very, very nicely into little jabs that were just like, say something really stupid now. If you could just walk into this bear trap for me, that would be great. And he just did it. I don't want to throw too many analogies out there, but I want to say hook, line, and sinker. Yeah. He found them all.
I mean, it's incredible. I think if we were debate strategists, if we were on Kamala's team doing debate prep, I think I would say every single answer you give tonight somehow fit his crowd size into that answer, and this man will lose his mind.
Yeah. I mean, any like, again, I go back to the Biden thing. I think that the golf thing was just try to get him off his game and say, like, he's not as good a golfer as he says he is. And then he'll, no matter what the question was, he's just going to be like, look, buddy, I'm going to tell you about my golf game and just talk nonsense for his entire duration that he's allowed to speak. And then they would cut him off. But, Biden didn't have the energy to do that, we'll say. The last debate was not favorable.
Yeah, I don't know if I can give Biden that much credit or the Biden team that much credit for trying to sneak that.
I think that the campaign teams are pretty well strategizing that particular tactic.
Yeah.
And the one thing I'll say that was different this time, and I looked back at I hated doing it, it hurt me, but I looked back at some of the old clips of the debate between he and Hillary Clinton in 2016. And one thing that is starkly different between Kamala and Hillary is that Hillary came off as kind of like snide almost. Hillary would say things, and it was still that, I want you to say something stupid now after I'm done talking. But the air that she presented it was just so much, it was haughty. It was, I'm so much better than you. And I think that that resonated with a bunch of independents who were like, who is this jerk who's just being, whatever. And Kamala was like, here's my position. And now, ha ha, little joke we're all in on at the end of my thing. His crowd sizes are small. And then he walks right into that rake as quickly as he could. I think that they learned, I'm hoping that they learned that lesson, and that rings true.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. I remember watching those debates with Hillary and just thinking that she obviously had that air of the chosen one. This was all wrapped up. This is in the bag. Why am I even on the same stage as this idiot? Which is a fair,
all fair.
Yeah. I mean, certainly fair to feel that.
They're all saying, why is this guy on the stage? Marco Rubio, Chris Christie, they would have all been better. But you put this clown up here. I don't know. And then, yeah, Hillary, I think you're right. I think she was, offended that she had to debate this person. And that sort of seeped through into the way that she presented herself, the way she spoke, the way she debated. And I think that really resonated with people who were like, Hillary Clinton, she's been in this, legal turmoil because of Burisma, or not Burisma, whatever it was back then. And she's sitting Senate hearings and, all this stuff. And the first thing they learn about her is that she acts this way, like holier than thou. And you're just like, that's a big turnoff to me. I don't know. And I think Kamala did a better job last night of just being more relatable. And circling back again, just to what we were saying about the vice presidential debates. I mean, you want to talk about a relatable guy. I like Tim Walz.
Oh man.
I'm ready for him to face off against that absolute clown, JD Vance.
I mean, so yeah, we were looking at that. That's going to be October 1st. That's a Tuesday as well, the first vice presidential debate. And Tim Walz is such a relatable guy. I think he's probably the most relatable guy at this level in politics since Jimmy Carter. I mean, I can't think of
I agree. Guy
in recent memory.
And he's got the right credentials. Like, he comes from the right place. He was a teacher. He's a coach. Like, people that you and I, regular folks, interact with on the day to day. You drop your kid off at school and you talk to the teachers who are standing around or at pickup or whatever, and you relate with these people and you're forced to socialize, as opposed to Trump and JD Vance, which are used to barking orders at people and don't actually talk like humans because they don't ever talk to humans. They don't know how.
They don't. They have no clue. I mean, just watching him going into that donut shop, I wish we had that clip lined up. I mean, what? It's just unbelievable. And I've seen a lot of great parodies now of it. I don't know if SNL has done it. I haven't seen SNL in a little while. But I think everybody's feeling that way about JD Vance. I will say that just along those same lines, first of all, totally shocking VP pick, right? Like, I don't think anybody expected her. I thought Shapiro for sure.
We were talking about that too. We were saying, like, here's the money line, and Shapiro was clearly high in the money. Tim Walz was coming up in the later days, but it was one of those guys where, I'm still from 2016 a little bit hurt. I was a Bernie bro. I wanted a Tim Walz style guy. I was like, get somebody relatable. So I was really happy when they made the pick that I thought was going to be a lot more like, not populist, but just like popular amongst voters who don't need to know a lot about the VP. To put it another way, did you know anything about Tim Kaine or Mike Pence before they were given the nod. Like, I didn't know anything about either of them, and I'm
No.
pretty politically online.
And, and to, not only is that true, but even after I researched Tim Kaine, I didn't know anything about Tim Kaine. I mean, that's how
You
bland
still
that
don't
guy
know anything
was.
about Tim Kaine. Pop quiz.
Okay.
Is Tim Kaine still an elected representative?
So the only reason why I know this is yes is because I saw a recent poll of him, he's I think he's up by 8 points,
No. Oh, and
winning.
I'm wrong. I'm wrong, actually. He's a senator. Excuse me. Not a representative.
Well, I mean, you said an elected representative. I didn't know.
Yeah, I'm in
Yeah.
House of
Yeah.
Representatives.
Oh, okay. So yeah.
Congress.
So I only knew that because I was scrolling through the recent polls. I'm waiting to see, kind of the polls from after the debate, and I noticed that Kane was gonna win his seat. I mean, he's plus 8, plus 10, something like that. That's pretty much a
Yeah.
lock for him. But yeah, and I mean, the only thing I found out from researching that was it basically seemed like his spot as VP was pretty much predetermined. He was the former head of the DNC.
Yeah.
Say, hey, if you give this spot up to who was it? Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
W. Yeah.
Yeah, D DWS. We all love DWS. I
All
don't I
favorite.
couldn't tell you where she is anymore.
Probably heading to DNC. I mean, I don't know.
No, yeah, I don't. Yeah, I actually don't know. So anyway, that's to say, yes, Tim Walz, which totally shocking pick. I think totally fantastic pick. Will it move the swing states? Because, this is the only thing that wins elections now. It doesn't matter if you're in
Yeah.
California, Texas. Although, hey, I've heard everyone likes to hear maybe Texas will turn blue one of these days. With the, Houston growing, Austin growing, places like
Yeah.
that. I don't see it happening. I don't want to say not in my lifetime, but not in the next decade or so.
Yeah, I don't think that I would consider at this time, I wouldn't consider Texas in play. I'm not, likely to consider any like Florida. I don't think consider that in play for Democrats, I mean.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's like, I think that picking up Walz will probably move the needle a little bit in that, northern Midwest areas, those swing states of Wisconsin or Michigan, maybe. It can't really hurt except for his football team pick, I think. But other than that, you have somebody who actually is a Midwesterner, basically. And he's been governor. He's got a great history behind him of leading a state. And it's one of my critiques actually with Kamala originally. When she was given the nod from Biden, I'm from California, obviously, and so I was like, she's an attorney, district attorney that won a special election to fill a vacant senator seat, and she served for half a term before she ended up taking the nod. I'm going, she has no experience in this at all. Well, now she's obviously been the vice president for 4 years, so she has the experience. But at least Tim Walz, I think, doesn't have that same argument to be made against him coming up. So.
And not that that's necessarily a good or bad thing anymore. I mean, certainly folks on the right are saying that because Trump, at least before his taking of office, he was a political outsider. He didn't have a lot of experience. We really want something like this. Now,
There's nobody can stand him, but sure.
for sure. But no, to that point, I think that one of the things that I really like about what the Harris-Waltz campaign is doing, if you remember back in 2016, I could make the argument that one of the reasons why it was so hard to flip Wisconsin, Michigan, and places like that is Hillary didn't visit those places. I mean, what the fuck?
Enough anyway, yeah. I mean,
Well, she
she
did. She
didn't
just.
visit
Yeah.
she didn't visit Ohio. That's the one that I know that she didn't visit in the rundown to the election. She just didn't go again. But the other ones, I think she made little stops at. But again, she was campaigning a majority of her time spent in either New York or California, which were locked up for her. day one, California and New York are going to vote whoever the blue ticket is. Doesn't matter. Why are you spending any time or money there? Go spend it somewhere else.
Yeah.
But I do want to circle back to you at this point, because you'd mentioned that a lot of people in the voter base, especially, I would guess, in those swing states, they don't know a lot about Kamala. They don't, like you said, she's relatively dark horse. Is that a fair term?
Yeah, I think
because
so.
She doesn't make a lot of the news cycle. She doesn't take a lot of interviews. So there's not a lot to be said about her. So it's probably time, right? It's September. It's time to start doing the campaign trail and making stump speeches in these swing states.
So yeah, I will say that at least I read recently her, I think she's calling it her way forward, or the, you know, the new way forward. I don't know what the exact
right.
quote of the campaign was, but they're already, I think, Waltz is going to be in Wisconsin and Michigan this upcoming weekend. Harris is sticking around in Pennsylvania for a little bit longer, and then they're both going, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan, Nevada, Arizona. So it looks like they're making that actual real effort to go out to those.
I mean, good. I'm on 270 to win right now, and just looking at the current layout based on consensus polling, and so they're saying Ohio is likely, so it's not even considered a swing state anymore, to go red. But Pennsylvania is still in play. They still think Georgia, North Carolina, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, Nevada are all in play. They think that, I mean, this is a different map than the one we were looking at with Biden.
Yeah.
let me look at the 220.
Yeah, if you look at the change.
Oh, they don't show the actuals. Sorry, they didn't show the actuals. This is the prediction. So they predicted it similarly in 220, in 2020, excuse me, except that Pennsylvania now is worth more. Oh, we did the census, obviously. All of these these electoral votes.
Pennsylvania changed. Is worth less, right? It's one less, and
one less. California is one less.
Yeah, North Carolina Colorado. Is one more. Right.
Yeah,
Texas, little and Florida. Yeah, Texas and Florida are unfortunately, three more total. Montana being another one that's dark red, you know, plus one more. So I actually think net change is bad for Democrats. Yeah, plus two Republicans, minus one Democrats. But I mean those three, that's not gonna cause it. You have to win Pennsylvania. You have to win, you know, North Carolina or Georgia.
We can spend a lot of time, and I'm sure we will in future podcasts about talking about the Electoral College and how the votes can go. But the point I wanted to make is that, they need to start spending their time in those states. And I think that Walz brings an energy, even if, you know, because Kamala is the vice president, she's going to have some duties that she's going to need to stay somewhat East Coast bound. She's not always going to be that way, but Walz, he brings a good energy. I've watched a couple of his longer form speeches. I mean, these are stump speeches on the order of 20 minutes and taking no questions, but he's good. He hits the right notes. He brings the right energy. And I think people are kind of fired up that you have this guy that most sort of assumed wouldn't be the VP pick, but has this history and track record of doing good things in his own state. Like he clearly, I'll never get over it. He's the VP that wants to feed the kids.
Right, right. Now, I think there's a large part of the Democratic base, I don't know how large it is, that have some concerns with both Harris and Waltz and their history on, the Israel-Palestinian conflict. I don't think we'll probably... I don't want to touch too much on that in this episode, but I think their messaging around that has gotten better. It doesn't give me hope about actual resolutions if they take office.
To be clear, none of these Democrats, I think, are going to do anything that I think would be useful in order to stop the violence in Israel and Palestine right now.
Yeah,
I think that the most I've seen this far is maybe a call for a two-state option, but I haven't seen anything about, you know, ceasefire now or any of that other stuff that's just wildly popular with both sides of the aisle. So
I mean,
so I agree. I think it's going to be, it's going to be their albatross. It's going to probably be the focus of a lot of smear ads running the swing states. It's just going to be a lot of Kamala and her, you know, Marxist, Democrat, socialist, whatever's they're calling for Gaza or whatever, the Palestinians to take over Israel. They don't stand with Israel, all this other nonsense. So,
yeah, well, that's a big issue for some Democrats. I want to go into one of the bigger issues for the Republican Party right now, which has, you know, it's certainly surfacing a lot recently. This is a major issue for them. I'd like to play a clip here, and then we can kind of discuss. This is a clip from last night's debate, the first presidential debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. And I think Donald Trump outlines one of the biggest, you know, problems, I think, that Republicans want to tackle. And so let's play that now.
All right.
So she can't talk about that. People don't leave my rallies. We have the biggest rallies, the most incredible rallies in the history of politics. That's because people want to take their country back. In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there. And
so I just want
to. I need a pause. I'm just laughing too much. Yeah.
I gotta stop here. So eating the cats, eating the dogs, eating the pets of the people that live there in Springfield. That's kind of the, I'd say there's probably a lot of one issue voters in the Republican Party, and this is one of them.
In Springfield.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no doubt there.
Yeah. I mean, so I think this is what you were talking about earlier, that kind of Kamala teed him up for this, to just lose his mind.
Yeah. This was their campaign, training her. They did their prep again. I mean, you're going to hear it from every news network, but they prepped her well. And she just set him up. We didn't play the previous thing, but she says something like, you know, she eggs people on. She was like, go to his rallies, listen to what he has to say. And see why so many people leave his rallies early.
Yeah.
And then just kind of like leaves it in the air of like, he says crazy stuff, and but she doesn't say it, just like walks it out and then ends her time. And he starts his rant that way. And you can get the feeling that all of his guys in the background are just like, oh God, like rubbing their foreheads, like he's just going to do it. He's going to go crazy.
I mean, literally the response to you say crazy stuff at rallies was, they're eating our dogs, they're eating our cats. I mean, what the? So yeah.
They're eating dogs over there. And you're like, what are you talking about, man?
I would say, if
this was on national stage, I'm hoping, need people to see this, because I don't think that they had this either in 2020 or 2020 or 2016, where Donald Trump got up there and just said, honestly, insane stuff. He said dog whistle things before, where he's like, we're going to deport 100 million people. And you're like, okay, buddy, let's get grandpa to bed. But like now, like eating dogs, and my rallies are bigger than everything.
You know, the great thing about the eating dogs thing, is, first of all, don't worry, anybody out there listening who loves dogs, there have been no reports of anybody eating dogs in Springfield, Ohio. But the great thing about it is that he actually got that from Twitter, right? He got that from Elon Musk is retweeting this. You know, the House Judiciary Committee ridiculously was posting AI images of Trump, like, saving the cats and dogs or whatever. And nobody else, you know, I'm not sure people know this yet. Twitter isn't real life. And when this guy is getting this ridiculous information from Twitter, I mean, I just look at my family members, you know, my 15, 20 closest family members, then none of them are on Twitter, right? They don't know what the hell he's talking about. So he gets on and he's talking on a national stage and he starts saying things like, they're eating the cats and the dogs and their pets in Springfield. People are baffled.
Yeah. He goes on to say, you want to play the rest of the clip?
Yeah, let's see what else we have in this clip here.
And this is what's happening in our country, and it's a shame.
ABC News did reach out to the city manager there. He told us there have been no credible reports of specific claims of pets being harmed, injured, or abused by individuals within the immigrant community.
Well, I've seen people on television.
Let me just say here, this is the
people on television say my dog was taken and used for food. So maybe he said that, and maybe that's a good thing to say for a city manager.
All right, Here's the thing, He's seeing it on television is very telling, okay? Because this is what we remember from the Trump presidency, right? He sits around the White House. He's got Fox News on every television, that, and he's never out of eyesight from a television. So he's only seeing what's going on there. Now, of course, who went on television to start this whole nonsense but J.D. Vance? J.D. Vance gets told by, I got to assume maybe it's in good faith. Maybe he's not being trolled. Maybe somebody, some person in Springfield is trying this little dog whistle thing of being like, my Haitian neighbors, that my dog went missing and it smelled like my dog. I don't know how you'd even prove that they ate your dog, but he got on Fox News and said this, and then it made its way to Trump because he's seen it on TV. And the funny thing about that is that the only people I remember seeing anything about was J.D. Vance on Fox News. So it, on the one hand, okay, it's straight from J.D. Vance. But on the other hand, Trump doesn't seem to remember who J.D. Vance is. He sees him on TV and he's like, that guy said it. I know him. He said it.
Well, I think like, somebody actually called him out. Somebody called him out on this. And I think he said something to the effect of, I don't even talk to J.D. Which was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Like,
That was after the debate.
Yeah.
He's back there with just people and microphones and news networks. And he's trying to spin. And he's saying, like, I don't even know who J.D. Vance is.
Never heard of the guy. Holy crap. I mean, that clip right there where he says, I saw it from a guy on the TV. They're eating my dogs. If I had called my gramps up, you know, I was like,
Grandpa said that.
And he said, they're out there. I see it on the TV. They're eating the dogs. I would have, you know, if I weren't close to him, I would have a welfare check. I would have somebody go over.
Yeah.
Check and make sure he's okay. Make sure he's, you know, his meds are good.
Make sure he's taking his meds.
Make sure, you know, I mean, that was literally insane. I mean, he was arguing that he saw, he's the former president of the United States, and his source for saying that they're eating the cats and dogs was he saw it from a guy on the TV. I mean, this is the guy we want back. This is the guy that killed, by the way, millions of Americans during a global pandemic. And we're like, you know what? Yeah, I want to go back to that. I think we need this again.
And like, you and I are both pet owners. Like, we've had pets all throughout our lives. We know, you know, mostly indoors stuff. But like, I remember, like, everybody that I know gets their pet chipped these days.
Yes.
You know, pet LoJack, essentially, right? So like, let's just take this at face value and say, in good faith, okay, let's say J.D. Vance found, like, the one terrible apartment building where these people keep finding that their pets go missing and they suspect their neighbors are eating them. Well, like, okay, but they called out to the city controller. The city controller checked with the local police departments. The police departments said there are no reports of pets gone missing, because that's how you check. You take your chip receipt or whatever the number, you go to the police department and they can do that search to find within like 150 feet of where your pet is. So like, if this is a good faith argument that your pet has gone missing, why haven't you talked to the police? Even if you haven't chipped them, you'd think the police are driving around, they'll keep their eyes out for a stray dog here and there, right? Or like, go check with the pound. Did you ask the pound any of this? Have they, you know, bound your dog and put him in a cage and they just don't know who he is? And none of this holds up the smell test, is what I'm saying. It's just all nonsense. And I feel like Trump's on the butt end of the joke. Like, they were trying to stir up this sort of racist dog whistle because they were blaming it on the Haitians. And I don't think anybody told Trump it was a dog whistle. And he's like, they're eating the dogs. And he's like getting sad and upset about it.
Yeah.
It's really tough.
I mean, unbelievable. And I think, so one of the big things that happened last night after the debate, I wanted to talk about this a little bit. There's probably a ton more clips we can play from the debate. But we're doing this live. We don't have that shit queued up. We're just going live here, okay? After the debate, I think it was very clear to anybody with a brain. And seriously, I mean, I know you're on the left, I'm on the left. And like I said, I try to take a step out from that and look on other sites, like where the needle is moving. I think it was pretty clear that Kamala was at least the most put together of the two candidates. Whether or not you agreed more with her policy, at least she said things that made sense.
Right.
So after the debate, I think for whatever reason, one of the people that everybody's been waiting for to make an endorsement is Taylor Swift. And so Taylor Swift wrote a long Instagram post last night, finally endorsing Kamala Harris. And I think the wait was for similar reasons. I think we all know she had already backed Joe Biden. She's never voting for Trump.
Had she actually backed Joe Biden? I didn't remember that.
Yeah, she did officially endorse Joe Biden. So that's why people were like, why hasn't she immediately endorsed Kamala?
Well, then that feels like they were like, can you wait till after the debate? Because we feel like it's gonna just
So
good time. If you're a political strategist and you were like, you have Taylor Swift's endorsement in your pocket, there are times to release it and times not to. After a debate that Trump thinks that he won, which he clearly did not win, and then dropping that on top of it just feels like you're
maybe
hit him in the spin room.
Yeah, I might have staggered it because I think she clearly won the debate last night, and I would have gone with that momentum and seen where that could take you. And then if you hit that low, you hit it with the Swift endorsement. So yeah, I don't know if it was kind of like most other people. We really need to see Kamala out here, see her face off against Trump. You know, I think that she probably would have endorsed Kamala, you know, even if she had a bad performance. But I wanted to get to the meat of this, which, yes, she finally came out. She endorsed Kamala and Tim Walz. And after that, Elon Musk had something to say about it. Did you see what Elon had to say? Yeah, so Elon comes out. Let me find the exact. I don't want to misquote the guy. I want to do him justice. So let's make sure I get the exact quote.
All right, we don't want to misquote him because he'll sue us.
Yeah. So, fine, Taylor, you win. I will give you a child and guard your cats with my life.
So he's gonna give Taylor exclamation part underscore question mark 4875 or whatever the name of his kid is.
Yeah.
Or is he gonna? That's what he's saying, right? He's gonna take one of his existing children and hand it to her.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that. I mean, that is probably a nicer. That's the Disney version, I think, of what he's trying to say. It sounds more like he's saying he will put a child in her. I mean, I don't know how else you can read this. I don't think any part of that endorsement that I read was an invitation for Elon Musk to impregnate Taylor Swift. I don't know. You read it as well. Maybe you saw something.
I didn't get to the bottom. Was there like a postscript? I mean, was there a possibility of like a Elon winky face at the bottom or something?
No, yeah. there was no winky face. There was no / S for sarcasm. There was nothing that indicated.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
It was meet me in Mississippi or wherever I can make sure that you can't have an abortion and let's get this baby thing going.
And it's been an interesting ride to watch him plumb new depths of divorce. It's just amazing to me. And I have to wonder, I mean, for a lot of these guys, and this is going to be a common theme here on Blue Sedition, I think that you're going to find that we take a look at these guys at face value, these personalities, we'll say, the people out there putting podcasts out on the right may or may not be getting paid by Russians. So it's hard to say at this point.
Wow.
But they feel, I think, to normal people, like they're grifters. They're selling something, they've got an agenda, and they're looking to make money, and that's all they're doing. And with Elon, I just can't tell. I can't tell if he's trying to be a grifter or if he thinks he's some sort of, like, you know, circa 2000 meme edgelord trying to make friends in the cringiest way possible. Like, I don't get him. I just don't get his personality, and I think his money insulates him from any actual social activity where he has to, you know, interact with people in a normal way.
Yeah.
So he says things like, okay, Taylor, I'll impregnate you. I'll take up the torch on this.
Well, not yet. I mean, he's obviously speaking to the incel crowd, right? On
Twitter. Oh, yeah.
And I think he loves the adoration. And I think the thing that happened is, you can kind of see this with a lot of other people too, is that he was trying to play himself off as the intelligent, I'm going to take you to Mars, I'm building spaceships, you know, adore me. And when people on the left weren't, you know, oh, you're our God and savior. And he started kind of poking at the right a little bit. He immediately found that these people will idolize.
He got the attention. Yeah. He got the attention he was looking for. He's the kid who wasn't getting the right attention. So he started acting out. Totally agree. That's a great way to look at that.
Yeah. And now he can't quit it. There's no way.
The dopamine hits must be great.
Yeah.
I mean, with guys like Cat Turd 2 on your side, I mean,
how could you not? Yeah, I mean,
how could you feel like anything but a winner?
And by the way, I just want to touch on something else you just said. These guys that may or may not be getting paid by Russia, we're just starting out. We are not making $100,000 a podcast. I'll be lucky if I can even figure out how to edit this damn thing. So if you're listening to this already, then congratulations to myself, because we got this farther than I thought it would. But yeah, Putin, if you're out there, you know, I hear that you're dropping, you know, 100 to 400K a month. But supposedly, just to hear the thoughts of Tim Pool and Benny Johnson as is, you're not even telling them what to say. So if that's accurate, I just want you to know that our you know, our phone lines are open. You have me, you know?
I got nothing to follow up that. That's great. Yeah. If they want to throw that kind of money at us for doing this podcast, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Just to say exactly apparently how we already feel. So listen, I think we had no real kind of you know, outline for today's episode. It was like, you know, the debate was last night. We wanted to say a couple of things about that. I think in the future, this kind of looks like we might have a couple of different topics that we want to cover. We kind of wanted to just get this first episode out there to just get a feel for it, really just to kind of get the recording bugs and all that other stuff kind of figured out. And I think future episodes will probably be laid out a little bit differently. But probably, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, I think that's going to be like our goal moving forward. But, you know, if you're listening to this, if you like the show, if you have some comments or anything you'd like to see us tackle, certainly feel free to do that. I think from what I hear on other podcasts, I don't know, we've never done this before. I think it helps if you five star or you like or subscribe. I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah. Like, subscribe and hit the bell, all that good stuff. Yeah,
one of those things. Poke us, put us in your top eight, whatever. Like any of those things. I think that helps out. So,
and don't forget to follow us at Blue Sedition over on Elon Musk's favorite website.
Yeah, so we got at Blue Sedition there. We'll probably try and get it on some other places. Unfortunately, the account is suspended as of right now. You know, sometimes we get a little mouthy. Turns out if you're not a Nazi, you get suspended much faster than if you are a Nazi.
The debate sort of raise the blood temperature a little bit, we'll say.
I maybe got a little out of hand. You know, Candace Owens mentioned that she was tired of suffering through Kamala, and I said, you know, something along the lines of, you know, I hope you're able to end your suffering one day, and that was completely taken out of context.
It was very kind of you, wishing her to get well like that.
Exactly. I think
the moderators will probably accept your appeal because it's obvious that you're trying to be an ally.
Exactly. Yep. So we'll see. Hopefully we'll have an update on that next episode. So, you know, Mike, before we sign off today, is there anything you want to add in closing?
I just want to say thanks for listening, and we look forward to hearing from y'all next time. Can't wait to get this going some more.
Yeah. If you made it this far, what the hell is wrong with you? Thanks so much. Yeah. and we'll catch you next time.